a host for tonight's event. You're all panelists. You're all here to take part in the discussion this evening. I'd like to acknowledge, though, we are on the traditional territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations, the Lekwungen-speaking people. And we're gathered here tonight for our discussion series that we've called It's Complicated. There have been five other events in the series. The next one is next month, October the 18th, and it's on new immigrants to the area. Tonight, though, we're here to talk about a tent city. And we're having this series because of our exhibition called Families, Bonds and Belonging. And in this exhibition, we have chosen to look at families through association, families by blood, families by choice, and families by belonging. And we want to talk about how tent city that was here in Victoria, but tent cities across BC, past, present, and future, can be seen with those lenses of a family and of a community. So the format, how it's going to work this evening, is we have invited some conversation starters. You could think of them as a small panel. I think they're more like a conversation starter. And they're going to each speak for less than 5 minutes based on their experiences. So they're not speaking for the museum. They're not speaking for all students or reporters. They're not speaking for all residents, but just from their own personal experience. And we hope that everyone will take part in the conversation. So they will speak briefly, and then we'll stop and we'll have a small group discussions around what we've heard. And then we'll have our next conversation starter and small group discussions. And after we've heard from those conversation starters, we will have just a more open dialogue that can be here. Now, speaking of dialogue, we've probably heard of safe places. We also want this to be a brave space. And by that, I mean to be brave enough to share your personal experiences and thoughts and feelings. Being brave enough to have those feelings or experiences challenged, to be brave enough to feel a little uncomfortable, if that's what happens, but to also do this in a respectful way. So you can think about what that means to you for a moment, what it would mean to be respectful in this conversation. And I hope that's something we can all agree on or agree to do this evening. Thank you so much. So, hello, welcome. We had invited, just to let you a little bit more about the people we invited to be our conversation starters. We reached out to a couple of aid organizations in the city, and they recommended someone or they requested somebody else. We went around like that till we found a few people. We did. Some organizations were unable to be here tonight, but there may be folks here who represent those. We did talk to the Dandelion Society and Reverend Al, but he was unable to come tonight. We spoke with Our Place and Don Evans, and he was also unable. I believe they have an AGM at this very moment. So we may have some associations with those organizations. We do have, and I did speak with the Society to End Homelessness, and they had arranged for Doug and Anna to join us. Yay! Committee to End Homelessness Victoria, thank you. Doug and Anna, I was hoping you might speak first for us tonight, just a little bit about your experience.
Oh, sure. Yeah. We also have Nolan with us. He was at the city as well. He's on our board for Six Society. That's Superintendent City Society that incorporated at the courthouse. So we want to look at different alternatives to the housing crisis here. And as long as you have the housing crisis, you're going to have homeless people, you know, regardless. Unless you get to the root of all the symptoms, it's just going to be that there's more and more people. As we can see at nighttime, more and more and more people, you know, and regular people from all kinds of walks of life who unfortunately have to, in the shuffle of things, experience something that doesn't need to be quite as difficult as it is made to be these days. So while we do have it very good in this corner of the world, at the same time, there's policies and things in place that aren't quite fair that are creating problems that shouldn't be necessarily. And that make things quite more difficult than really anything has to be. So notably though, we went to the summit in Vancouver on homelessness. It was between all of the tent cities, like major ones, the 10-year one, the one in Burnaby, and Maple Ridge has already been put into a building, but they are actually talking with the provincial government. So we formed a new family between all of us,
okay,
which is kind of exciting, so that we can hopefully collectively bargain with the government to alleviate some of those issues and make things better and prevent some of the issues from happening. So yeah, there you have it. That's exciting news.
So you formed a new family, you said. I like that expression.
Mm-hmm.
Did you invite people to become part of this family, or did
they
reach out to you?
It was an idea that we had once we were there. Like, we were at the summit, and there was all these other groups here, and we had come over from Victoria, and a couple of people, like Nolan and another girl, had at the same time had this idea that we should form a group between all of us to join, and we were invited by Maple Ridge to collaborate, so. Because they're actually, their lawyer has arranged for talks to the provincial government, which is what we were really gunning for at camp. We really wanted the chance to go to court with them, like, and figure it out, right? But we weren't able to have had that chance, so. And in the meantime, we've had some pretty bad experiences in the housing. Yeah, so I'll give the floor to somebody else.
Well, the housing you put us into is not up to snuff at all. In most areas, and we lost a lot of independence. We had a community going, formed out of people that wouldn't normally hang together, and because Tent City, that brought us together in a different way. So you know, there's a lot of good things that came out of it, and but where we're at right now is a bit of a problem. So you know, it's a new venture we have to get through. But our community was kind of split up, and being separated from each other and stuff like that within a building. It's hard to believe that it does happen. And there's lots of action all the time, new fights every day, you know, with different issues going on with the building itself. It's not a healthy building. And getting this work done and that is almost at a standstill, so. We have to figure all that out, but you know, other than that, just long hours. You know, there's lots of different things we have to tackle, and you know, lots of research and everything. We get lots of help from a lot of people, and we appreciate that. You know, as far as that area goes, I don't know, for this day and age to have that sort of thing going on, it shouldn't really be. You know, there should be more protection for people out there. You know, there's a lot of young people who haven't worked, who don't have experience. But there's a lot of older people who just simply can't afford a place to rent. And you end up there, and then you get poured in the same bucket, and you get out, everything comes that way, right? Mm-hmm. That's not fair for people who worked all their life and have to, you know, put up with that because the rents are too high. Anyways, anybody else care to explore?
You know, I think that we should all really keep in mind a couple of the things that you just said here, Doug. Now, I just want to remind people of them. You said that we lost something when we gave up Tent City.
Mm-hmm.
We lost, it was independence and community, right? Like, and they talk about how there's a division in the new place. Those divisions were always being, they were always trying to work those divisions within Tent City as well. But because I think we had the independence and community of that, of the tents, the walls that the tents created, that kept out the regular people that want to take away our independence and instill their own idea of community upon us, right? So, hats off to these two, right? You know, new leadership that's like coming up from places that like no one expected it, right? You know, and these are voices that, like, it's imperative that we listen to them, and listen to them not from our own perspective, but from their perspective, and try to actually hear what they're saying. Thank you.
Just to touch on something, just touch on the subject a little more about what you can put into. Okay, so just a little fact here. We had one death in Tent City for the whole time that we were there. Within the last year that we've been in PHS building, there's been 10 deaths. Okay? Tent City, while we were in Tent City, we were able to respond to our own distresses and deal with them effectively, obviously, because we felt like one death. We're in a building that we're in now. We have no idea when something goes down. We have no idea how to, I mean, if something's happening on the first, on the second floor, people that maybe on the third or fourth floor that would have responded to something like this in Tent City don't even have a clue this is going on. Mm-hmm. So it's taken away our communication, it's taken away, well, that's a small part of it, along with our identity and our problem solving situations that we have.
Anyone else who is a resident want to speak about that?
It's funny how the levels separate people. And the thing about what Nolan just said to me was that the flat land of the Tent City allowed for communication and allowed for someone from one corner to run with narcolone to the other corner or throw it to whoever needed it, right? You know, like, how do you throw something that far when you're contained in little spots that aren't really set up for actual humans to live in?
As you're saying, you can't even see each other by communication. I see people in the back of the room. You're welcome to come. There's some more chairs here, and there's some spots there. Yes.
I know there's other people from Penn City here too who want to jump in. And I mean, I really appreciate it having your opening, but Nolan, I can't remember your name.
I'm nobody.
Well, I know you are somebody.
Thank you.
But I love that the topic of family. And it was at Penn City where they played in the room where remember when one meeting happened and Reverend Al was trying to help with communication and there was he would go around and talk to all the folks and then come and let us know that. And then you folks came out more and started talking about families. Like, so family, so to describe the families that existed already, they existed way before Tent City on the streets. So those families started almost formalizing themselves more in Tent City and growing into bigger families. And they started talking about, you all started talking about reps coming and speaking on behalf of families, family heads and people to speak for and get consensus from the group. And it's, you know, that's a natural thing that happens in older, you know. So that was the beauty of what happened. And the divide happened because, like you just explained it really well, I thought, that we had outside stuff come in and sort of trying. You know, we all came with ideas, and some came in with them and kind of, you know, it ended up going that way. So that's sometimes what ended up happening. And the system I found, I'm an activist, so I'm going to bring up something that maybe other people can't. You know, the police came in and helped encourage that divide. That's what I witnessed. And it was difficult. The colonial system is about divide and rule. And I witnessed it where community was thriving. And that was probably the biggest heartbreak that for me of all the Tent City stuff. And there's no blame to the person. It was absolutely systemic. And I do blame the APD for helping to do that. And I really thank you for doing this. And thank you for bringing it in under the topic of family.
Seems to me we beat the Supreme Court. We did it on sacred ground, and all we got to do is like find sacred ground.
With logic, though.
Anybody want to live in the tunnel?
Logic.
We got a tunnel in Malahat, which Malahat Nation just got burned on LNG gas. Anyway, I'm going to have this as well.
Well,
it could be a buffer for $10 billion light rail system on one side, and $100 billion natural gas system on the other, which we're not conceived by. But there's a million gypsies on the hills. Istanbul, waitress, come in, have a market. Istanbul's figured out. We passed a tunnel on the way here. Could have put 20 people in with a roof like Amsterdam. Give them hot water. Give the church a break on taxes. Give the IGA a break on tax. Boom, 20 people living.
It's
so simple.
It's the mile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. I'm talking about taking the tracks, taking the entire thing. Squamant Nation wants to separate, let them. Malahat Nation's on my team. You guys want to live in a tunnel? 100 feet long, there's a second one on top of it.
I honestly thought the city council was exploring our bylaws to try to take out the ones that actually go against our natural rights that are granted to us by, we don't have a constitution,
yeah,
but
right,
whatever it is that we actually have. As long as sometimes bylaws are okay, but if
I'm waiting for you to finish,
yeah,
and I've got something
yeah
to add to answer that.
It's just like if a bylaw is set up there and it infringes on my personal liberties to be like a self-sufficient human being living on the island that we call Vancouver, then those bylaws have to be taken out. And I believe like the poet counselor and the mayor both have said that they want to do this. Loveless, what's his name?
Jeremy Loveday.
Loveday,
yeah.
Right. And so he wants to do this. Helps, is she not here? Why is Lisa Helps not here, for one thing? And Carol James. She should be here, for sure. Without a doubt, Carol James should be here. This is her goddamn writing. You know, and I love Carol James. You know, I met her in Terrace. She sat here. She told me I should run for office. You know, she should be here. Because like when you squeeze Carol and James together, you get CARES. And that's what she does. But she didn't show us any of that love. The NDP never showed us love. You know, the Liberals never showed us any love. The Greens never showed us any love. And they were two blocks a frickin' way. Like, the only people that showed us love was right here, right across the street from us. You know, thank God they brought the cisterns of water over to us, let us use their washrooms before, who was the one counselor who decided she decided to put in the washrooms for us because they finally realized that, hey, we can't just pee in the bush, and girls really don't like to squat. You know, give me a fucking break. This is like, we're supposed to be moving into like the era of the Empress, and like we're like throwing like this garbage everywhere, and the people who want to pick it up, we treat like the shit that we throw out.
Tomorrow's council meeting is about, in fact, making the bylaws even worse for people who are dependent on their own means to survive, because they're looking at changing the pending rules, et cetera. Because again, we have this trend towards ignoring the source of the issues for band-aid solutions that make it way worse. So not only do we not have anything forward, this is the like three steps back part
that we're looking at.
And sandwiched between tons of developers who are having stuff passed in 6 months that Vancouver takes around 2 years to pass the same kind of project. That's why there's so many cranes on the skyline and everything, and things are moving too fast for anybody to really know what's going on with all of this. What are the social impacts of it? Well, from where we stand, it's got a pretty clear picture that we are being had. Like, there's, we're not benefiting a lot from what's going on at all, and it's exasperating an increasing problem exponentially. The social costs are enormous when we have, and I like to call them P3 housings, like a P3 companies that are the private public partnership. Well, they have a nice sort of mission statements and whatever, and when in actuality, when you get behind the closed doors, if they keep everything behind, things are everything but. The social costs are compounding and so much more enormous than they have to be if you just left people alone. Like, if we didn't have to have the courthouse lawn, we could have had any lawn,
you wanted,
any old lawn at all.
You begged for a parkade.
Yes.
I remember
sure
that.
Yeah.
You know, just so we could have like a flat area where we could all like pick our little corners, right?
Just without the
and what did they? What do they do? They just tear down the parkade and want to build stuff that creates levels that divide us. Why did they want to divide us?
Use your last power.
Oh,
can
yeah
I make a
this
point?
Point?
Sure.
I suggest actually trying to change the bylaws for maybe suggesting the candidates campaign on if you have a backyard and you want to grow hemp and mix it with concrete, you can make hempcrete and use that as a building material. Have some stipulations above, you know, if you can grow the backyard, it's no cost, but you don't get paid for anything, but you're contributing to helping to solve the problem, to be like an incentive that, oh, I can help, I got some space in the backyard. But also, as a point, what about making a bylaw that would protect someone that has a backyard to say, yeah, okay, I know this is kind of stressful for everyone, so why don't you set up your tent in the backyard? There's a space. And you can use it downstairs, wash it or whatever. You know, just have that ability so it can be offered.
So maybe we could have a smaller group discussion based on this idea of what people can do to help this community.
It's no, called I don't want to say adopt that. A hobo. Yeah. Adopt a hobo. You know, that's exactly what it is. You give somebody, you give a resident of Victoria a tax break to house a hobo in their backyard. Because you know what? When I had a backyard, I just did it. I didn't care about no stupid tax break. I didn't care about it is breaking a bylaw to have a tent in your backyard. Ralph needed a place to sleep. I had a backyard. Ralph is the same age as my father, born in the same town. I'm going to look after him.
But why are they closing Choices in the middle of December? Because they're not, they want the opposite. Else they wouldn't show, they wouldn't be closing the places. Tent City opened with hundreds of millions of dollars by beating Supreme Court in the middle of winter.
So Anna, why don't you?
To add, you're absolutely right. And to add to that, it went to a few shelters at around $2,500 a month per head, which most of us refused anyways because we know exactly what it entails. Around one death per month, same as every other supportive housing building in this city, and there's 25 downtown approximately. And those are average figures because we're doing our own counting, right? Nobody else, they're not even published with obituaries in our building in the 844 Johnson, they're not published with obituaries in when people die, with the exception of the 16-year-old that died outside with staff there because they wouldn't let her in. So, and that's a very, very sad thing to happen. But we've had 10 people's babies not come home or have to make a phone call to their parents that they are not going to come home. That is not acceptable. I'm sorry, and I don't care if it was because of overdose or not, because the rate at which should not increase the more money you give to another organization. So, I'm sorry for you.
They opened it, they closed it.
We need far less money. We just need our own autonomy.
They create, they give us a cost, like you, each homeless person is worth like $98,000 to them because of like all the different people that get to make money off of us. But we don't want any of them to make money. Money's the root of all evil. We kind of like dealing without it. We like barter. We do all sorts of things that are different from the norm. Quit trying to impose your idea of community upon us.
I think that's the thing that I heard the most from everybody, really, because I was the firekeeper in a while from the start, and I did my thing, and I completely parked because I have my own panic, so I couldn't be there or live there. But I've been there a lot, I talked to everybody, and I've been to the new tent city and talked to Christie. And it's incomprehensible for me because I'm, you know, I'm me. I like to live in a house. I prefer to live in a house that has walls and a fence and a yard, so I don't have to live in city people because that's the way I am. But in Tent City, they didn't like walls between each other. You know, I mean, it's incomprehensible for most people to understand that's actually what they want. Whenever that's what I say, because it is. I don't want the same as you, but that's what everybody's, because I don't, he asked me, what do you actually want? Because you keep saying you have these protests and you're doing this stuff, so what do you really want? And they just want a Tent City. They want a place where they can live in an old-fashioned style, because I was there for the best part. You guys remember Tent City between like December 15th and Christmas, or even before that, when it was like this great place where like even bad emotions couldn't linger? You'd watch like a little argument break out on one side of the camp and ripple around until it hit the place where it was like actually someone was having trouble. They deal with their problems quickly in front of everybody. And like for a while there, before they got overwhelmed and persecuted with the wrong supplies and just treated badly, It was a really amazing place. But villages exist in abundance. And if you watch Tent City and the progression of it, because it did eventually, when it ended, it was Tent City. And a city is a place where you don't have enough support and you don't have enough of everything. You have big economic warfare. And you have all these things. So, you know, in essence, what Tent City was at its best was a place where they didn't have those problems.
Do you know what the biggest problem was there?
What's that?
communication to the government, they wouldn't talk to us. But until that changes, none of this will change.
Yeah.
It's job creation program for them, that's all it is. For the police, justify their double amount of policemen they have per capita, and anybody out there was also, yeah.
Not everybody came to the fire to talk, and that's where it was, but the problem being basically is that everybody thinks we're homo sapiens. You guys are homo sapiens, okay? You're still a man that thinks and lives. The rest of us, we're called homo economus. How does it relate to money? We don't understand you at all, because everything's about how do we make money, how do we live, how do we survive, what's the next thing, right? Because we're constantly rushing, because we live in a city, and there's not nearly enough to live in the city. We've gone from being the predators in our society to the prey, because that's what lives in cities, right? We're all scurrying around trying not to get eaten and live for another day. That's the psychological difference between Kent City and everybody else.
One thing to add to that is we didn't want to be there in the first place. We had to be there because we had to go somewhere. We would rather have been on the outskirts. Had they talked to us, that $25 or $50 million they say we cost them, it would cost them about $1 million. I have plans for a micro village. He wouldn't talk to us.
We sent 7 letters and phone calls.
I sat and had a 45-minute interview with Carol James, and we come to the conclusion that if any of this is going to change, it's going to be a long-term project. It's not something you're going to fix in a year or two.
Yes. The way you're saying that Sean Costa said to the people money, I just have to address it before I go on, because I don't want to come back. But when you say you cost the city all this money, from my understanding, what happened was the city acquired 2 buildings of highly valuable downtown property and leasing them out at a break-even point. Even not with the current value, whatever Kent City costs and all the incurring costs in between, when those city buildings eventually become declared unfit for human habitation, which I get 5 years, if before that, basically you can't have another choice but to tear them down. They'll be sold at a profit to somebody for who knows what. So I don't see it actually costing anything.
Sorry.
As far as I can see, you made the city somewhere down the road with $100 million.
Yeah. And what about the social cost of giving us all asbestos poisoning, huh? 150 of us and our friends.
And I just want to jump in
because
there's
social costs of the asbestos.
The asbestos in the building,
asbestos in that building.
What a surprise.
Yeah, at 844 Johnson. But there's, I just wanted to just express this with, with love that there's not just one we. There's a lot of people out there attending right now. There's little accountants all around Victoria. There's all kinds of needs in each one. And this is the thing that everyone's talking about a lot, is that the government has not heard. And Doug has reminded us that he's had a plan, they've had a plan, Anna's had an eco-village plan idea since way back at Tent City, a no footprint green idea, temporary spots if needed. And we have learned that the bylaws, like all through history in modern time, you will not find a city that gave you the right to make a little micro house village. People squatted it, and then negotiations began. We have waited for 2.5 years, and it has not happened. And we wanted a village, a micro house village. The community technology secretary brought Mark Lakeman and the other couple to here. These helps jumped in, other people jumped in, and now it's down to a little freaking 6-person trailer, all little smoky team, right? No village, just a little 6-person trailer, and they can't even find a spot for that. So we have to squat the spots. That's what, that's the message of the Tent City movements everywhere. And that is actually what's happening. And I just wanted to sort of put that out. And also, if we can do a round, because there's so many people here. I feel a lot of energy from a lot of people right now. And it'd be nice if we can maybe do a round, get an opportunity for at least that kind
of outsider. Thing. Yeah, we need a stick and one big
shirt. Well, do you want to be the fire keeper?
Well, fire keeper actually just needs fire going to the sink. It all works out.
May I offer a solution?
It's your turn.
Well, let's go right here.
I'll be bold. All right. It's wonderful to hear from all of you. I'm just going to say I'm in the field also. I've had the opportunity, and I'll call it an honor, to be part of my place. And I did see in this small area with 40, tents in the gym, how the people come together like that but also they require their own space. And that wasn't enough. You know, the space between a tent inside a gym is not enough for people to be who they are. So I'm hearing that you want the flat spread out space, and I understand that. But I heard that, and also heard so much when I did work in the field that they want their own space. So how do we balance that as a whole, as a community? How do we create a family that, like for example, in a household, to me, if I'm pissed and I don't like you anymore, I'm gonna go to my room.
Well, there's never gonna be one all-encompassing solution that's gonna satisfy everybody. So more, smaller, bigger, or more. And some small, some big, right? So that you have a tent city that is more like Doug's dream, and a tent city that's more like Anna's dream, and there's Nolan's tent city over there, right?
What you don't do is hand the contract to somebody who has a history of scandal in their finances. Like, we were actually incorporating at the very same time as they just handed it to PHS, and what have we gotten? I mean, I've got nothing good to say, so I might as well just not say much at all right now. It's just,
sorry. We made it up a solution then.
Well, we did hear from you,
yes, okay,
and,
no
I,
problem.
And I haven't
no
heard from a few other people, then you've got your hand up, and then maybe I'll come to you, Kathy.
Yeah, just quickly, the obvious one to me is that any move they do, any housing strategies the government's trying to work on, anything to be done, it's just ludicrous to do it without consulting with the people who it's affecting. It's like a doctor treating you and never meeting you and looking at any charts. It's just stupid. You know, they have to be consulting. They pay exorbitant fees to people to bring people in to consult with them, like on the bike lane system, because I know a lot about cycling infrastructure. They paid just crazy fees. And then people get upset when a couple of meetings there was funds offered to when homeless people come in and consult, whatever, and people get up in arms in that. When we pay so much to these consultants that come from outside, we need to talk to the people who it's affecting. That's the one thing, that the government shouldn't be taking any action on anything without consulting. And in fact, they should almost have some sort of office that doles out wages to people like that, like Anna and Doug here, who are very valuable resources, so that they can keep coming up with it. Because I hear your frustration with my place, you know, you're talking about the housing solutions, and he hit it in the nail, the fellow with the Pirates hat on there, hit it on the nail, you know, when he said there's not one solution. So it has to be a constant, ongoing consultation with the people who are affected. That's, to do anything else than that is just ludicrous.
Thank you. Kathy, we invited Kathy from
Pirates
Hat to be one of our conversation starters, but we're doing well in terms of conversation.
I don't think there's any challenge in getting the conversation started.
No, not
at all. I mean, certainly, you know, as a service provider, kind of from the outside looking in on Kent City, I think we heard loud and clear that the folks there were empowered by what they created together. Like they were proud of what they created together. They felt safe there. And I think those are powerful messages that can't be ignored that are a legacy of Tent City. And certainly, you know, one of the things that we do strive to do within Kool Aid, because we do have a number of supported housing buildings, is to help create community amongst the residents within our buildings. And one of the buildings that was opened as a result of Tent City was Mount Edwards Court, and I think that's, you know, it's a much smaller scale than the Johnson Street community, and we've had some really incredible success creating community within that building. And I think the folks that live there are proud of what they've done there. They feel safe. They feel like they are a community. Unfortunately, there's a lot of pressure from the outside on that particular building, even though I think it's melded seamlessly into the neighborhood. They're you know, one of the legacies of Tent City is this kind of polarization that happened within our community that pit different groups of people against each other. You know, it really emphasized an us and a them, and I think that's one of the sad parts of what happened out of Tent City is that I think there's there's a meaner side to Victoria that has come out as a result of Tent City. And, you know, that hurts my heart for sure.
We've had a lot of people move here from Ontario.
Yeah.
And I mean that. I absolutely mean that.
I think the big difference between what you're saying and what they're saying is the difference between a service provider and a utility provider. The people from Tent City, it's not everybody that's in your services, but the people from Tent City and a lot of their friends would prefer to have utilities at their disposal without experts. Mm-hmm. And they'll bear the weight of their bodies. That's kind of what they're saying. I mean, you know, I mean, we take care of our own, is what I hear. You know, and maybe that's the way it is. Perhaps trying to show somebody how to live or what to do or what to expect when it comes to including a family is not up to the people in the family. Mm-hmm.
I just have a question. So I'm a nurse. I've been to the Johnson Street housing before, seen some people there, and I've worked in supportive housing sites before in Ontario. I'm from Ontario. One thing I'm really proud about some of the sites I've worked at is that there are communal spaces for people to be together. And one thing I really noticed about Johnson Street is that there's entire spaces that are not used. There's a big, completely empty room at the back when you walk in that, I mean, it's been a few months since I've been there. I'm just wondering if you've had any conversations with Portland Hotel about creating a communal space.
Since the beginning, we've had so many conversations. We could go blue in the face, to be honest. But they refuse to follow judges' orders. Like the judges' orders coming out of Tent City into this building, they did not follow them whatsoever. They just made up their own. We won an arbitration over the guest policy, which was key, but they still do not follow the vast majority of those judges' orders, and they were very specific. And might I add, so we know we have to hold our one shop open 24/7 monitoring it, and they come in with police, fire people every week to harass us as opposed to hold up fire code.
Sorry, what was the guest policy at Tent City?
Oh, all open walls. We would have to deal with each and every situation,
and we
took care of it.
Right, how many deaths were in Tent City?
One.
How many deaths have you had in Johnson?
Ten.
Almost today, because of that.
You know what? You know, based on what a homeless person is worth, I think the city lost about $1 million through those deaths. You'd think they'd be upset.
I don't know. My experience in contracting and houses and stuff, working for people, and I've worked for tons of people who have nice houses and everything else, but most of them have broken the fire code in their homes, willfully or unwillfully, so many times, with bad wiring, blocked exits, cluttered garages, cluttered bedrooms, improper use of candles. Is there anything else I can think of a homeowner doesn't do in the privacy of his own home that violates the fire code? I'm forgetting, you know, smoking and drinking or whatever it is. I'm sure the thing is that's the thing, all these people do that, right? You know, and then Tent City, you know, same thing. Like they were probably better behaved than their average person. I'd say far better behaved, just right, the harassment. And if you left them alone, you know, what's really gonna happen, right? One guy out of 10 might die less. A lot of garbage might get picked up for free from the city and turned into like some bird shit before it finally, after like six times being used, is thrown away or burnt. You know, I mean, that's the thing. Everybody wants to say, what can we do with it? We could have left them alone and give them some money and a peaceful place to stay. Right? I don't think you can fix something that works. You can just leave it alone and see what happens. You know, that's the only thing I hear from this crowd.
Which is true too. I mean, thank you for touching on that, by the way. That's awesome. That's all we've been trying to say is, like, who better to deal with this problem than people that are there done it? I remember being, when I went, got in trouble as a kid, went to juvie, and there was a drug counselor in there that was trying to talk to us. And I looked at this guy and I said, so, what kind of drugs do you do? And he's like, none. I'm like, do you even smoke a joint? He's like, nope. I'm like, at least you drink, right? He's like, nope. And I remember being so flipping mad about it because I was like, who are you to come in here and tell me how to live when you don't even know what the fuck you're talking about? It means you get these people that have read books and they think they know everything about everything and come here and try and fix the problem that they can't fix because they don't have the knowledge that you can only get by being there and doing that, right? And that's the thing, is we're not dumb. We have solutions. We've come forward with solutions and they're just not heard. It's really pissed off, man.
Heard, but not enacted on, which is even more frustrating, right?
But whom do you tell? Like, I don't see anybody else that was here at this meeting, and we're talking about the new building, and so we're gonna have a drug room. I said, what do you mean? I said, well, we're gonna have a room where you can go in and do drugs, and it'll be safe and nothing will be happening. Okay. Everyone here masturbate, and everyone look in the room is like, okay, there's four of us, and we're all like, yeah, okay, we've all masturbated. Okay, okay. Now we're gonna have a masturbation room. When you want to masturbate, you gotta go to this room. It'll have all the best porn, a TV, nice couch, lube, whatever it is you like to masturbate with, we'll be there. But when you masturbate, you've got to go to that room. And they didn't understand what I was talking about until I told them that. So I'm like, that's their personal experience, you know? I mean, that's the thing. You can't explain stuff to somebody that thinks they know what they're talking about when they just don't see the other person as being real.
I don't want to go to that room and masturbate, man.
Nobody in that room did! Oh, it was the funniest conversation in my life, but I don't know how else to make that more happen. So I hear what people are saying, right? And that's what I did. I was sitting listening for quite a long time.
I think, unfortunately, what is exactly that. You can't see yourself sometimes. And service providers, sorry to pick on you here, but it's hard for somebody in a position to make choices about the way that another person lives. It's almost as if they're natural enough that it shouldn't really be done all that much. But I think there's a polarization of the neighborhood because there is policies in place which cause the problems, which cause the polarization. Right, and that would be specifically the paraphernalia policy that you at Mount Edwards has brought that paraphernalia from the inside of Mount Edwards where it belonged to the outside where it was running into trouble with the schools and everything like that.
No, we have no problems with paraphernalia. Mount Edwards is an open place. People are allowed to use on site. We're not policing that in any way. Going forward, yes, we've had to say we're not going to be able to take people that are addicted because the neighborhood's not allowing that. And so we'll be screening people at the front end. And so if you have an addiction, you're going to have to live in one of our other buildings because we won't be able to support you at Mount Edwards. So that is one of the challenges, absolutely. But currently at Mount Edwards, yes. If you're a user, you can use on site. We support you. We're there to, you know, if you need assistance, come and call on us. If you want us to check in on you, we'll do that. So there's no need for anybody to be using drugs out in the neighborhood or leaving paraphernalia out there because absolutely, it is.
One of the things that's happening, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Kathy, because there were Port Hotels inside the building, and there are people being barred, and they're saying that they're not evicting people, but they're working with the police to actually evict people. I won't get into the reasons why we're involved with police complaints, and we're involved with, you know, supporting people going through charges that are having to do with the fact that they're being more oppressed. When the building first opened, for example, there were no stairwells unlocked. All stairwells were locked. And SWAT teams are going in regularly and locking the elevator down. So people are locked in the building, being told to go to their rooms, like a little jail. So, you know, eventually what would happen? They get direct action on one of the stairwells. You get those stairwells open, and it was like one of those things that just happened. One of those 100 monkey events. You know
videos
what I mean?
On YouTube.
Yeah,
and videos
on YouTube. So it's horrible what they're having to go through as a result of trying to, you know, tell the community, look, this is a freaking jail system. So they finally got the one stairwell open, and they finally stopped with the SWAT maneuvers all the time. We have those on YouTube as well.
I beat that charge.
Yeah,
so.
And but, you know, so it's just that we tried, they squatted the third floor room to answer the nurse's question. They squatted the third floor room to get it so that the residents can have a community room. PHS said that they were going to give them community rooms.
The judge said to give community
yeah.
rooms, and we still
yeah.
haven't been getting, given the rest of them. We still have to protect the only one we have. It's a small room for the number of people that live
yeah.
on that floor.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, and there's no secure storage or anything like that. We're constantly struggling with the staff over harassing policies, procedures that have nothing to do with the way that we want or need to live. And so we're suffering quite a bit of, like, you know, trauma as a result of being interfered with still on such a, like, daily basis that, I mean, if I'm reacting badly, it's just because it gets a little bit old. Like, let's just say that it's like, you know, it's too much, and we are looking at moving out, and I don't care what it looks like when we move out, sorry if it's a mess, but we've had it, like, we've had to, it's just way too much.
Hey, Anna, they have no intention of doing anything with that building once you guys are done with it, other than tear it down and build something that's much taller, that'll have so many levels, that'll divide so many peoples into so many unlivable spaces that Starbucks is going to be busier than ever.
It's the new Y site for the cops.
I want to talk about the 10 villages. So you talked about that. So this is one of the things that you notice that we handed out leaflets and stuff. So that's part of the Sick Society folks here who are at Tent City who formed a society. There's a lot of people from Tent City as well besides the Sikh Society. There's a lot of different groups that happen in Tent City. There's a lot of villages forming. There's at least three spots that we're going to be having to do because we're in hell. Like, just go out one night walking around with Thaw Victoria and see how many people are in little single little doorways, and it's horrible. And for some reason, any of the homeless who are organizing, like Sikh Society, when they're out there, I've seen it, the police go after them. So we did a protest. So it's Thaw Victoria last weekend, some of you know. We're going to go out to a site, and I put it on Thaw Victoria. And we left, and we saw five, six cops